Hi there. My name is Amrit. I'm from Phoenix. I'm going to be the moderator for the whole tract this afternoon. Our speaker is Dr. John Scott. Oh, the wind tunnel is shutting down. He closed the door. It's going to be more comfortable. The topic today is Nuts and Bolts, Veterinary Medical Records, Do's and Don'ts, Part 1. And I'm going to hand over the mic to Dr. Scott. Thank you.
Be sure and fill out those evaluation forms, because I'm going to do 40 or 50 of them, so you'll have to override my opinion. You also might kind of do a count. I don't know if we're going to need any more of those or not. I think they did 40, so yeah, see if, because we won't need those till the next session. I am John Scott. I am a lawyer. And I'm a veterinarian, and I can't decide what I want to be when I grow up, but I do both now. I represent plaintiffs in medical malpractice lawsuits against physicians. I don't sue veterinarians, and I practice, I work 2 days a week in a regular veterinary practice in Amarillo, and work about 8 or 10 shifts a month at our emergency clinic, so I try to kind of stay up in both fields. Today we're going to talk for the next 2 hours about veterinary medical records. In going to different practices, talking to different veterinarians, this is probably the area that I see that needs the most work in most practices. 95% or more of the veterinarians that I talk to are practicing very good medicine. They really do good work actually treating animals, but they're not doing very well in their medical records. So that's what we're going to talk about this afternoon. The first session here is going to be pretty much just slide presentation that you're used to. We'll finish up with that in the second hour, and then we're also going to kind of do a little workshop thing. We've got some copies of medical records that I have gotten from some veterinarians that I know. And we'll pass out copies of those, and you can look at those, and we'll look at them and try to find out what's good, what's not so good about these records. That's mostly so that when you get back to your practice, you'll do the same thing with your medical records and see what you can do to improve yours or what's already good about them. We're going to talk about why we need to keep good records, what's included in the medical record, just as important, what's not in the record, how you alter a medical record, third-party regulations, computer-generated records we'll talk a little bit about, though it's not an area of expertise for me by any means. We'll talk a little bit about consent forms. We had an hour this morning on informed consent, and we won't spend another hour on it, but we'll touch lightly on that. And we'll also talk about ownership of medical records. So why keep good records? Well, it's essential for good patient care. The older I get, the more I find I cannot remember. Many of you have not run into that yet, but you will. But if you're in a fairly busy practice, after a week goes by or 10 days or 6 months or however long, it's difficult to remember what happened. When I got out of vet school, I went to the University of Georgia for a medical internship. And for about the first 6 months, if you would tell me a couple of things about any animal I had seen, I could tell you the rest of it. I could remember almost every animal I had seen. By the end of the year, that was beginning to not be quite so true. Now, after 30 years of doing this, unless it was a really, really unusual case, I don't remember any of them. And so medical records are good for you to be able to remind you what happened with that animal 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago, 6 years ago. They're very important in a multiple doctor practice because the same doctor may not see that patient each time it's in. The practice where I work a couple of days a week has 4 veterinarians. We did have 5. So it's very important that they be able to read my records and I be able to read their records and that they're complete. Saves me having to go through the whole thing again with those. So multiple doctor practices is very important. Then the things we don't want to think about. Disability of a doctor. If you're in a car wreck and you're in the hospital for 3 months and then recuperating at home for 6 months, you have cancer and you have to be out for a while. Someone else is either, if it's a multiple doctor practice, they're taking up the slack. If you're a solo practitioner, someone's coming in and running your practice. We had a veterinarian in Amarillo probably a year ago, was killed in a motorcycle accident. Some various veterinarians in town were giving a half a day or a day to try and keep his practice going until they could find someone to come in and do it. In situations like that, medical records are just critical. They're important for litigation, and as a lawyer, that's what I talk about. They're important for grievances. I'm not sure if it is true in the state where you are, but many states now, Ohio I think has been the worst, and Texas where I'm from is kind of that way. If someone files a grievance against you and they hold a hearing and you have to go to the hearing, once you are in front of the board, you're open game for anything that they want to do. They don't have to limit themselves to an inquiry just involving that particular case that the grievance was filed about. And it is not unheard of that someone will file a grievance, you come before the board, they decide that that grievance has no merit whatsoever, but they look at your medical records and they will sanction you because your medical records are not what they ought to be. So for grievances, it's also important not only to argue the merits of the grievance that was filed, but simply to have good medical records once you get there and someone starts critically examining those records other than people in your practice. Same way for a sale of a practice. If someone's looking to buy a practice and they're looking at two or three practices, they're all about the same size, they all are asking about the same purchase price, one of them's got outstanding records and the other two have terrible records, which one are they going to buy? The one with the good records. So if you're hoping at some point in the future to sell your practice, the better medical records you've got, the more chance you're going to have of being able to sell that practice. So what's included? Registration forms. The thing that you have the client fill out when they walk through the door. That's a part of their medical record. There's some information in there that may be interesting, and it may also be important at some time in the future if there is ever litigation regarding that animal. Because there may be some information that they gave you on there that someone is going to think important. So don't just throw those away when they're done. Those become part of the medical record. Consent forms, radiographs, estimate sheets. If you give them an estimate on what you think it's going to cost, try to do that in writing. Put it in the record. Billing records. The financial records are as much a part of the record as your medical notes. Telephone consultations. When you talk with someone on the phone, jot a little note about what it was about. Put it in the record so that you at least have documented that you talked to them and preferably a little bit about what the conversation was about. Controlled drug logs, laboratory results, surgery reports, discharge records, patient history, treatment records, consultation reports. If you send a patient to a specialist, whatever they send back to you, make sure that's a part of the record. Billing and payment history. So let's start with the history. I think this is probably one of the most important parts of the record. If my voice lasts the day, we're going to be lucky. Or maybe you'll be lucky if it doesn't. History is the place, I think, where many people fall down in their medical records. Sometimes it's because you don't get a good history. And if that's the case, you just need to change the way you do things. Because I think most people realize history is, if I could do without examining the patient, either examining the patient or not getting a history, I think I'd not examine the patient. I think I could probably make more diagnoses from the history than I can from actually looking at the patient. Now, that obviously is not always true. If they just have a dog that's coughing at night, I'm going to suspect heart problems, but I'm not going to diagnose those until I can listen to the heart, get x-rays, maybe do an EKG, whatever. But the history is just as important as the examination, if not more so. I recommend, and I do this in my practice, I tell my technicians, get a general idea of what's going on, but don't go into great depth of getting a history from them before I come into the room. Now, if I take the people in, that doesn't matter. Once the client has told one person facts about the dog, they assume everybody in the clinic now knows that. Somehow, that by telepathy, that information is all transferred. So if you are the second person in the room and you ask them for the history again, there's a fair chance you're not going to hear all of it that they told the other. On the other hand, you're going to hear some things that the other one didn't hear. I recommend that even if your technician has gotten the history, you start all over again and get a complete history. If the technician does it, be sure they write it all down so that you've got a good idea of what the people told the technician, so that at least you can read it and then you can go from there. I think it's important to get the history in chronological order, and I have to be real careful when I'm doing this not to tick the client off, because they will start talking about two or three different things and I will stop them and say, wait a minute, let's start at the first and go through. Because they'll talk about the dog's been vomiting, and then they'll say it's had diarrhea, and then they'll talk about it's been coughing, and they may cover a two-week span and you're not aware of that. You think it's doing all of it at once or whatever. So I think it's real important to find out it was coughing 2 weeks ago, and then 3 days ago it started vomiting, and now it's got diarrhea. That's perfectly plausible. But, you know, otherwise you get in trouble if you don't get things in chronological order. I also think that when you do something like that, tell them, you know, wait a minute, we want to get this all in order, and asking questions, they say it's been vomiting, and they want to move on to something else. And you stop them and say, wait a minute, when did it start vomiting? Was it vomiting every hour, or only three times during the day? How often was it vomiting? What did the vomitus look like? And you cover all of that. Okay, now let's move on to diarrhea. When you stop the client and do that, instead of just letting them ramble on and you're going to kind of straighten it out in your head later on, I think it emphasizes to them the importance of the history, that you think it's important and you want to really know what's going on. And that encourages them to give you a complete history and also to work with you on getting it the way you want to, instead of just rambling on and on and on, and any thought that comes into their head that they're telling you about it. Okay, the examination. You've got to do a complete exam on every patient, no matter what they're there for. And it doesn't take that long to look at their eyes and their ears and their teeth and look in their throat and kind of feel the lymph nodes on your way back and listen to their heart and pick their skin up for dehydration and check their pulses. You know, you can do that in about 2 minutes. It's not a big deal. And you'll be surprised what you'll learn if you're not doing that. If you'll start doing it, you'll be really surprised what you'll pick up. As far as the medical records, I think it's really important that you record the normal as well as abnormal. And you can do that in a bunch of different ways. At our emergency clinic, our form has a bunch of little check boxes at the top. And it's got heart... I can't remember how they're all broken down. The problem is most of us don't use it, and you'll see that later because I've got a couple of records from that. But if you want to do something like that, that's fine. Or you can just write it down. People that read my records see heart, lungs, color, normal, probably in 75% of the patients that I see. And I think it's important that you get that down, because if litigation comes up on that animal later on, they're going to say, well, did you listen to this dog's heart? Well, sure I did. Well, why didn't you write it down? What did you hear? Gee, I don't know. That was 3 years ago. I don't know what I heard. So you need to write down those things, and that stops a lot of questioning from later on. One thing I think you do not want to do, if you have a computer record system, don't default the normal things, so that if you put this is abnormal, that the computer automatically checks that everything else is normal, because that really doesn't help you very much. Unless, if you can say to an opposing attorney, yes, I have to affirmatively enter in there that the heart's normal, the breathing's normal, the skin's normal, the color's normal, the perfusion's normal. If you can't say, I have to put that in by some affirmative action, they're going to make hay out of that and say, well, that might have been normal and it might not, because it was just the default setting in your computer. So if you use computers for your medical records as well as your financial records, be careful about that. Body weight and temperature. Some practice acts, the Texas Practice Act, requires that you record the weight and temperature if it's possible. They at least make an exception for 110-pound Rottweilers that would like to eat your head if you get within 10 feet of them. So it's not an absolute. But on the animals where it's possible, Texas law actually requires that you do that. It's certainly a good idea anyway. There's nothing like having a dog come in for vaccinations, and you ask him, how's he doing? He's doing fine. And you kind of look him over, and everything's fine. And then you take his temperature, and it's 104.5 or 105. And if you hadn't done that, you know, that animal's walking out the door, and the next day he's going to be at another veterinarian with a serious infection, and you didn't catch it. Conditions that change over time should be recorded in enough detail that the change can be documented. This is things like, yes, there it is, the size of tumors, skin conditions, dental tartar, things like that. If you've got a dog with a skin tumor and you tell the people, let's kind of watch that for a while and see what's happening to it, see if it's growing, document in the record. It's the size of a pecan. It's the size of a walnut. It's the size of an egg, a grapefruit, you know, whatever. But try to get some idea of the size of that, so that when they bring that back in 3 months later, you can get some idea of how big it is. I also tell people, when you get home, on a calendar or some other thing that you can find 6 months from now, you draw a circle on there as big as that tumor is when you get home. Because if they're checking it every day or every week, that tumor can be 50% larger and they won't notice it, because they're checking it all the time. If they just waited 6 weeks and checked it, they'd notice it was bigger. But document in there what it looks like. On things like skin conditions, put as much of that in there as you can, whether it's scabby or not, or if it's just red. And again, that's if someone else needs to look at that, if you're in a multi-doctor practice. Try to describe that as fully as you can, so that the next person seeing that can kind of get an idea what the change has been in the week or 2 weeks since it was seen before. Diagnosis, if possible, you want to put down a specific diagnosis. Clients always are more comfortable when you can tell them exactly what's wrong with their animal, even if you tell them 2 weeks later it's something different. But if you can give a specific diagnosis, that's fine. It makes them happy. It helps you. But don't do it unless you're reasonably sure that that's what's going on. If a specific diagnosis isn't possible, record provisional or tentative diagnoses. Record a list of possible diagnoses. And that can be two or three. That might be a half a dozen. Sometimes all you can put is, you know, on that dog that you just came in for the vaccines, and all you found was the temperature of 105, and you found absolutely no other physical abnormalities, the diagnosis may be infection of undetermined origin. But at least put that down. If you can't even get any diagnoses, put a list of the major problems. Fever, or he's limping, or abdominal sensitivity, or whatever. If your diagnosis isn't real clear from the history and physical, and this is a good idea to do this anyway, I really recommend that you record your thought process in how that you got to that diagnosis or that tentative diagnosis. I'm trying to think if I've got an example in my head. And I don't. But any time you can record how you got to where you did get, it helps you think back, if you see that animal again a week later or 2 weeks later, of what you were thinking at the time. Certainly if another doctor sees it, you'll see. And in a couple of these medical records, I think we see that. Even if your diagnosis turns out to be wrong, recording your thought process and how you got to your wrong diagnosis may show that that tentative diagnosis was a very reasonable diagnosis at the time, given the information that you had. And when we're talking about malpractice, as long as you did things the way they should have been done, the fact that you got to the wrong diagnosis doesn't make a lot of difference. If it was reasonable from what you knew, and if your thought process was reasonable, just the fact that you missed the diagnosis is not malpractice. Now, if you didn't do the things you needed to do to get there, then it may be. There you go. I thought about something the other day. I have seen some statistics from a human hospital where they compared diagnosis at autopsy with the clinical diagnosis before the patient died. And it seems to me the clinical diagnosis was wrong in like 30 or 35% of the patients that died. Now, you'd have to look at their methodology in how they got those figures, but that's pretty frightening, that with all of the imaging techniques, the laboratory techniques, and everything else that are available in human medicine, and 35% of the patients that died had the wrong diagnosis when they died, that's pretty scary. I think that tells us that if we think we're making the right diagnosis 98% of the time, we're probably fooling ourselves. Now, on simple things, and that's why I say you have to look at the methodology, simple things to diagnose were probably not included in that because these were people they did autopsies on, so they were pretty sick. Get off of there. Ah! Gee. I was telling one of the earlier groups, this is a neat little thing. This is it's actually a mouse, but it senses the movement of your hand instead of having to depend on a light or a trackball or something. Somehow I got that to doing it all the... Okay. There we go. But if you hold down a button, it'll move the cursor, and then when you let go of it, it's there. And you can use it just like a regular mouse. And this particular program, if you... you can use it to underline things. And you can see I had too much coffee for breakfast. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But somehow that got locked down. Treatment. Record that as completely as you can. The name of the medication, the size or the strength of the medication, the route of administration, time you gave it. This is a format that I like to use. If you've got, for hospitalized animals, if you're given TID or BID or whatever, when you order that in the morning, draw those little boxes at the time. And then when someone gives it, they check the little box. Preferably, they initial it. Well, now, oh, there it is. But they can put an X in it, put a check mark in it, put initials in it, whatever, to show that it's been done. And that way you have a record of what they actually got rather than what you ordered, which is really the important part. If you keep different things in different locations, for instance, you have your regular files that you have for your outpatients, and then hospital records are kept in a different form, and surgery records are kept somewhere else, and like in human hospitals, anesthesia records are kept somewhere else. You've got to make sure that all of those are quickly available. If you don't keep them all in one spot. So if your hospitalization records are somewhere different, that's fine to keep them in different places. Just make sure they're readily available. Surgery reports, don't use cookie cutter surgery reports unless everything was totally normal. I sued a podiatrist one time, and he had really screwed up this lady's feet. And she had had hammer toes, and he had gone into with a little Dremel tool to grind off some of the exostosis in the bones in her toes. And in one of them, he had ground off about half of the articular surface so that the toe now went this way. And I looked at his surgical reports, and they had absolutely no bearing on what he had actually done with the woman. He talked about, the surgery report talked about doing surgery on toes that he hadn't done surgery on. It didn't talk about surgery on toes that he had done it on. And it was just a form that was in his computer, and it would kick out. It was what he intended to do, not what he did. And so be real careful if you use those kinds of forms, that if anything was unusual, you go back and you change that in the form before you enter it in the medical record. Otherwise, attorneys can really make hay out of that. Record the suture material and the suture pattern. That's not too important until they dehisce, and then it will be real important for you to show what pattern you used. Otherwise, they may assume that you used a continuous gut in the abdominal layer, and it broke, and too bad, the whole thing came open. Anything unusual, any bleeding that you didn't expect, difficult exposure, if you were repairing a fractured leg and you really had trouble getting in there and you had to stretch and pull and that sort of thing, you don't know, you may have done some nerve damage in there. If it was absolutely necessary to fix the leg, that's okay. If you damaged that nerve, you couldn't help it, and it's not malpractice. But if you don't record something like that, and that dog can't walk later on because he's got a severed nerve, then you may be in trouble. Obesity, if there's a lot of fat during surgery, things like that. Anything unusual like that, make a note of that. When you discharge the animal, and this is a place that almost every practice that I look at fails, the date and the time of discharge, the date's usually there, but the time's not usually there. But was it in the morning? Was it in the afternoon? Was it 2 o'clock? The condition at the time of the discharge, what was the animal like? If he was in for orthopedic surgery, it's very likely he may be limping when he goes home. That's fine. He's supposed to be doing that. Record that in the record, though, that he was limping. Any medications that you dispensed, most of us do that pretty well. What instructions you gave to the client by the doctor or your staff. We ran into this at the practice where I work. And the people were threatening to sue us. The practice where I work is right across from the fairgrounds. And they're having a dog show at the fairgrounds. Little dog over there jumped off a table and he fractured his radius and ulna. They brought him over and we diagnosed it. We're in Amarillo there from Tulsa, Oklahoma. It's 10 hours away. And they first said, okay, let's just put a bandage on it. And we'll drive toward Tulsa, and someone from Tulsa will drive toward Amarillo. We'll meet, transfer the dog, take it to our veterinarian in Tulsa, and we'll have them fix the leg. And we said, that'll be fine. We'll just put a bandage on that to stabilize it, and you can do that. Well, then they decided no. They wanted us to fix the leg. So we said, that's okay. We can do that. So we fixed the leg. Well, then the next day, they do the transfer thing. they go and they meet halfway and they transfer the dog and they take the dog on back to Tulsa. About 6 weeks later, we get a letter from an attorney wanting to sue us because the dog's leg had to be amputated. We had put a bandage on the leg after it was pinned, told them and handed them a sheet of paper and put that a copy of that sheet of paper in the medical record that said, take this dog to your veterinarian tomorrow to have it rechecked. They didn't do that. They waited a week. Then they took it to their veterinarian. Now the foot is swollen. It's beginning to necrose. And I hope you haven't seen those, but I have. And there's not much you can do except take that leg off. So they were wanting to sue us for the dog losing his leg. And, of course, being a show dog, he was would be a champion. He wasn't, but he would be one of these days. But since we had all of that in the record, it was very easy for me to simply write a letter to this other attorney and say, here's some things you need to think about. And the first thing I told him was, you may not realize that in veterinary medicine, all you can recover is the value of the animal. You can't get any punitive damages. You can't get non-economic damages. So, you know, you're looking at maybe recovering $300 at the most. Second thing is, and I sent him a copy of this thing, of the instructions. It's not our fault. It's your client's fault. It's not the dog's fault. It's not our fault. And that was all we ever heard from it. If we had not had that in the record, it probably would have made a big difference. If we had been able, if all we could say was, you know, we told you to take that dog in, and they say, no, you didn't, then we've got a problem. So having that stuff in the record, there's just no substitute for it. Other things you want to make notes of, make a note when you call the client and notify them of diagnostic test results. Yes. I can't hear you. Oh, no, we just had put a copy in the record. Well, it would be better if they had signed it, but we didn't. But the fact that it's there is fairly hard to argue with. When you call people and tell them what the results are, just jot down a note in the medical record that you called them. Otherwise, they'll say, you never called me. And you can say, well, yeah, I did because I wrote it in the record. And you, then you can argue all day long whether you really did or not. And that's part of being a lawyer. But putting it in the record goes a long way towards showing that you did it. Summaries of telephone conversations, the same thing. Just a little quick note of what you talked about on the telephone. Write that in the record. Referral recommendations. If you tell them, you know, you really ought to take this dog to the specialist or you need to take it to the veterinary school, make sure you make a note of that. If they refuse diagnostics or treatments, you tell them, you know, we really need to do a profile on this dog, and they say, well, let's wait a few days and see. If you tell them you need x-rays and they say, well, I don't want to, be sure you make a note of that in the record. If you can get them to initial it, that's even better. Some practices have a form that refusal of treatment form, and that's fine too. But if you get them to sign it, be sure and put it in the record. If there was a disagreement during your discussions with the client, make a note of that, that you were having trouble convincing them that you were right or that they were one of those difficult clients to get along with. Now, we'll get to it in a minute. Don't put anything really derogatory in the record, but do make a note of if you had discussions like that, that there were problems. Now, what is not included? Remember that records are intended for internal use, one day may be public. If there's a lawsuit, they're going to be public. Let's see if I can get over here and again. I told you, I'm sucking this water down like it was the last thing available. I ought to just drink out of the pitcher, shouldn't I? So you want to be careful what you put in there. because someone else may be reading that other than you one of these days. So you want to avoid terms like stupid and drug addict and things like that in the medical record, even if it's true. I'm sorry? Yes. Sure. Anything factual, and sometimes, and I think I've got something in here about not putting in financial remarks, but if someone turns it down and they say, I'm not going to do it because I don't have any money, that's fine to put that in there. That doesn't necessarily, you know, don't say tightwad and things like that, but put in there that they refused for financial reasons. And that's fine. Try to use non-inflammatory language, but simply putting the facts in the record is a good thing. It doesn't have to be a lawsuit. Sometimes people will ask for their records if they're moving out of town, and you give them a copy of the records, and they're going to read it before they give it to the other veterinarian. And they find in there that you called them a wacko, and they're not going to be real happy with that. Records used in litigation, employees telling stories. Do not include derogatory remarks about the client, patient, or another doctor. And we talked a little bit about that this morning. Please don't run down your colleagues, except in exceptionally rare instances. When everyone in town agrees that Dr. So-and-so is a quack, you know, still you don't need to put that in the record. But certainly don't do it on a routine basis of Dr. So-and-so just doesn't know what he's doing. If they had brought this dog 2 days earlier, we could have done a whole lot better. Same thing about the clients, the patient. You know, you can put that the dog is a biter. Again, people may not appreciate it if you tell them that their dog is stupid. It may be, but, you know, don't put that in the record. Negative comments about the client's finances, personality, mental condition, addictions. We basically talked about that. Don't use private codes. Some people have different codes for different things. They'll have a code for people that don't have money. They'll have a code for people that seem to be kind of mentally disturbed. They'll have codes for other things. And they think by using the codes that they can put remarks like that in the record, and no one will know what it means. I can assure you that if there is litigation and the opposing attorney sees that in the record, he's going to ask you what that means, and you're going to have to tell him. And then you might as well have just written it in the first place, because now it looks like not only are you critical of the client, but you knew that it was something that you didn't want anybody else to know at the time, or you would have just written it in there instead of using a code. So don't do that. Just use honest, forthright descriptions. Keep them as nice as you can and still get the facts straight. Altering medical records. Alterations are entirely justified, but you need to do it in the right way. You may need to do it to correct incorrect entries. You may have just written it in there wrong. To make contemporaneous additions, you may realize now that you wrote something wrong there yesterday. That may be because the condition of the patient changed. Usually, though, it's just that you realize you made a mistake before. And it's entirely acceptable to correct those things that you realize are wrong. For handwritten records, this is the way you do it. You draw a single line through the incorrect entry so that you can still read what was written there. Don't use a magic marker to wipe it out. Don't scribble all over it so that you can't read it. Leave it so that you can read what was there with a single line. Draw a line through it. Then enter the correct information in the margin or in a separate location or wherever you can. Sign it. Date it. If you really scratch everything out, the obliterated entries really arouse suspicion. on the part of the client, on the part of their attorney, if litigation results. The only veterinary case I was have been involved in was a lawyer friend of mine. We served together on the board of directors of a legal aid group. And his parents had a German Shepherd that was spayed and died. And he called me and I said, well, you know, I don't sue veterinarians and I really don't like to get involved in cases like that unless I'm defending a veterinarian. But I'll look the record over and tell you if I see anything that really is a red flag. Well, sure enough, there in the record, when they sutured the dog, it said sutured with, and there was this all scribbled all out. You couldn't read it. And written above that was stainless steel. Now, I don't know what they sutured it with to start with. But whatever it was, they decided it shouldn't be there. And so I told him, I said, you know, that may be innocent, it may not, but it certainly arouses suspicion in me. The other thing, and this kind of comes under the informed consent that we talked about earlier today, the practice had been run for a number of years by a solo veterinarian. He now had an associate veterinarian who was fairly new out of school. I think she had been out of school for like 6 months. This was an 85, 90-pound German Shepherd. And he wasn't there. And the client had not been told that the new doctor was going to be doing surgery instead of the doctor that they had been going to for the last 10 or 12 years. That also was a problem. And we didn't talk about that in informed consent this morning, but if you have multiple doctors and one doctor has been seeing a certain client for the last ever how many years, and now another doctor is going to do a surgical procedure on them, you need to let them know that it's going to be another doctor. Because if things go wrong, they're going to say, I thought Dr. Jones that's been seeing this for the last 12 years was going to do it, and now you tell me Dr. Green did it, and I wouldn't have left it here for surgery if I knew Dr. Green was going to do it. If you had told them that ahead of time, they would have said, Dr. Green? Oh, sure, no problem. But once there's a problem, they're going to say, no, I wouldn't let Dr. Green do it. So you just got to tell them about things like that ahead of time. Falsification of records. That's usually a violation of board standards. It's often a criminal offense. Just don't do it. I was telling someone this morning, I saw a paper, it was in the law field, where they were talking about records in medical malpractice cases with people. And these people estimated that, I cannot remember the exact figure, but I think it was like 20-25% of medical records that are involved in litigation have been altered. And whether they were really falsified or not is hard to tell. But the consequences of that are just not good. You can lose your license for falsifying medical records. I was involved in a case where it was a baby who had nearly drowned, and they had taken it to the hospital, and the doctor that was on duty, the record said, had tried to intubate the child three times and couldn't get it done, and a respiratory therapist finally got the child intubated. They had supposedly intubated it in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, but they got it in the esophagus instead of in the trachea. So while I'm deposing the doctor, I ask him about this trying three times and not getting it done. No. I did it the first time. So I said, well, who wrote this record? Oh, it's Nurse So-and-so. Do you know Nurse So-and-so? Yes, I do. Do you like her? Yeah. Do you know that she could go to jail if she wrote incorrect information in this medical record? Well, I didn't know that. Well, she can. So did you try three times or not? So it's a really serious thing to falsify medical records. Just don't do it. Third-party regulations, record keeping is regulated by a state licensing agency that you know of. Some groups like AHA have standards of medical records that you need to abide by. If you don't comply with them, you can be subject to discipline by the licensing agency, which they may just take a little of your money. They could suspend your license. They can revoke it, put your name in the paper. Occasionally, criminal charges. And we talked about this before. Going before the board, sometimes you will be disciplined for the inadequate records that really had nothing to do with the original grievance. So it's important then. I want to talk a little bit about computer-generated records. Even though I am by no means an expert in this area. But any records that you would normally have written by hand need to go in the computer records, either by the doctor or at the direction of the doctor. Your computer records need to be just as complete as the written records. So don't think just because you're entering in a computer that you don't write as complete a record. It's got to be just as complete there. If someone else is doing that for you, your tech or your nurse or whatever, then you need to periodically review that and make sure they're doing it accurately. You're always responsible for it, whether you put it in or whether someone else puts it in. You should have passwords when possible, but they're pretty easy to bypass. But you should have a limited number of people in your practice that can have access to the computer records. Altering computer records, here's where we run into a problem. You should have your software programmed so that any alterations are recorded by the software, so that someone who knows your software can go back in and identify records that have been changed after the fact. You also should be part of your software that those records cannot be changed after a certain time. That may be the close of the business day. It may be 24 hours after the original entry. Whoever does your software can set that up for you. But since computer records look so much alike, you can change them and there's nothing to tip you off that they've been changed. There's not a different color ink. There's not a different handwriting. Things like that if you look at a record, you'd think, oh, this has been changed. So you need to have your records in such a way that if it does result in litigation and the other attorney brings up the possibility of altering the records, you can say, once we close the computers for that day, there is simply no way to change that record. You have to go in and make a new entry that refers back to the entry that you're trying to correct. And that's what you have to do. Yeah, should be an entirely new entry with a reference back to the original entry. Okay, we're running out of time. Okay, we're going to stop right there, and we're going to pick up in the next session again. Have we got any time left right now? Okay, have we got any questions that you want to ask before we leave? All you can do is tell them. And one of the records that we're going to look at this afternoon is from the veterinarian that owns the practice that I work in, and it is just that. His records are totally unreadable. Part of what I do is I won't see his clients. If it's a new problem, that's okay. But he uses a green pen, and it's very obvious that he's the one that's seen it. And if I see that, and it says recheck, I refuse to see that client. I'm just not going to get involved in that. And some of them, he's only there about 3 hours a day. And I have to tell people, I am really, really sorry, but you're going to have to come back tomorrow. And I just won't look at them. But, you know, getting them to change is tough, but it's really a risk. Because, you know, if you then have to treat the animal based on what he's written and you can't read it, it might as well not be there. It might as well have the date and that's it. Yeah. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Yeah, you don't have to have a separate thing. If you'll just write in there what you told them, that's better than nothing. One of the practices there in Amarillo came to me because a grievance had been filed, and I was looking at their records, and that was one of the things. One of the contentions was that the animal had feces all over it when it went home and things like that. Well, there was absolutely nothing recorded from that day. The last thing recorded was from the day before, and then they sent it home on Saturday morning. Absolutely nothing about the condition of the animal. You know, maybe it was okay and maybe it wasn't. But if there had been something written in there, it would at least be something that the attorney could use to argue with. Yeah, we out of time? Are we? Okay, yeah, right here.
In a case that has multiple doctors involved, is the liability that the doctor who first saw the animal and these things that go south?
I've been forgetting. The question was, if there are multiple doctors, is the first doctor that saw it the only one that's liable, or is he liable at all? It depends. See, I'm a lawyer. If like this, they're unreadable, then probably both of you share, and you screw up, then probably both of you share some responsibility if part of your problem was that you couldn't read his records. If that's the only problem, then he may be totally responsible, yeah. But then you're involved in, you're bringing in one of your colleagues into the lawsuit, because if they sue you because he didn't see it and you have to bring him in to show it was his bad records that caused you to not be able to do a good job, then you're basically suing your fellow veterinarian in your practice, which is not a real good deal either. So, yeah, that's hard to work with. You know, I don't know that there's any part that they can't do, but we talked about an informed consent. Who can get informed consent? And it kind of depends on the situation of how involved it is. But whether the doctor writes it down or whether the technician is at the computer, entering in the computer what the doctor is telling the client, I don't care. That, you know, as long as it all gets in the record, I don't really care who put it there. And as long as you check periodically and make sure that your technician is doing a good job of it, that's fine. I don't care who puts it there. Yeah, as long as it's accurate and complete. Yeah. Okay. What time do we come back?
3:05.
We'll finish this discussion. We'll have more time for questions, and then we'll look at some sample records.